Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Tom Stab here, not Dark, very important to make that distinction. It might be the last episode in our current series, but don't be blue, Peter! We've got some good news for you. As you know, our live show at the Prince Charles Cinema on the 24th of November is sold out. But don't worry, for those of you that can't make it, we're going to be recording the show and putting it out as a special two-parter on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. So whether you've had enough of talking with your family, stuffing your face full of Toblerone, why not sit down in front of the fire with a glass of Blue Nun and listen to our special two-parter live podcast, The Perfect Christmas Gift. And now, on with the show!
Support for Monkey Tennis comes from East Anglia Book Pulping. If you've published something that hasn't sold and you need it mashed to a pulp, we're here to help. From pamphlets to novels and everything in between, there's no job too big or too small for East Anglia's premier pulping house. If the sales of your latest book make it seem to the untrained eye that you haven't bounced back, then give us a call. Our pulping machines are louder than ELO in concert, and every visitor gets a free carrier bag of pulp to take home.
Monkey tennis?
Damn!
Monkey tennis?
Pierce my foot on this thing.
Monkey tennis?
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey tennis?
Done!
Monkey tennis? On the whole, a very good effort, 7 on 10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net. Monkey tennis?
It's almost time for us to leave the static caravan of chat and move back into real life. Welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined as ever by Tom Dark.
Looks like porridge.
Nick Older.
Bad slags.
And Tom Stab.
Buckaroo!
So here we are, episode 6, Alan Wide Shut. Let me just read off the back of the DVD so we know what it's all about. Alan appears on Prayer Wave, a religious discussion show on Talk Cambridge, has an invitation to Lynn's baptism and has a pressing engagement at the recycling plant following some bad news regarding his book. In the opening of this, Alan seems stoned.
Yeah, he sounds a bit odd.
Is there? Do they give a reason that he seems a bit tired and off?
Is he just bored of his own radio show?
Or sad about his book being pulped, maybe?
I think it's more a combination of tiredness, indifference, he's bored, and Mary, who he's talking to, is just incredibly
dull. I mean, Mary
dull.
Does sound very boring. But bonus fact, Mary is voiced by Amelia Bulmore.
Who's Amelia Bulmore? Sonia.
Sonia.
Sonia. Nick, where have you been for the last 5 weeks?
Have you watched any of this?
No, we've established that. Also, a weird one. I noticed he says, "I wonder what that looks like," twice in the first minute and a half of this episode.
Does he?
Yeah, a bit of repetition.
I've not seen it, to be fair.
Does anyone want to speculate what people will look like in a billion years' time?
I think at the end of the day, what will happen is we'll be more or less the same.
Yeah, I think Mary had it bang right.
Yep.
But what you want when you've got a late night phone in is you don't want accurate answers, you want funny answers, don't you?
Mm.
Genuinely, do we think people will be alive in a billion years' time? I don't think we will be.
That's a big question for this
podcast. It'll just be cockroaches and this podcast.
Living on.
I do love what Alan says after the traffic report in this scene. A lorry filled with livestock has jackknifed, shedding its load over both lanes. Wonder what that looks like. Probably like something from Saving Private Ryan, but with animals. It's a lovely scene there.
I can tell you, I was on a school trip to Barcelona when I saw something of that magnitude.
Was it traumatizing?
Yeah. Yeah. You know I love animals.
It wasn't good.
Sad times. I don't know about you guys, I think this is probably one of the weakest openings of the series. It's not laden with humour as much as the other radio. Yeah,
well, it doesn't start with a bang. Up on Mary, though, or does she hang up on him, even?
He just says goodbye.
Yeah, look at the back of a spoon in the bathroom. Goodbye, Mary.
Traffic.
Post-credits, his one-liner this episode is, Tom Sprockley, where? Now, I tried to look up who Tom Sprockley was. I don't know if anybody got any further than this. There's no record of a Tom Sprockley anywhere online.
Spotley or Spotley?
It's Tom Spotley when.
That's also what I have in my notes.
Oh, is it Spotley?
Yeah, Tom Spotley when?
Oh, I was thinking, I was looking up Tom Spotley and all I could find was a fantasy football team that had been named after this episode. Is it Tom Spotley?
That's what I have.
Okay.
We're doing live research.
We're doing him on the Googles.
The sound of typing. Tom Spotley, so the first line that, the first Google result is Tom Spotley with four question marks when. Which I think is a reference to the Alan line.
It seems like this episode
is
the only reference. Yeah, weird.
Chris Martin on Twitter, Tom Spotley when? I don't think it's the Chris Martin.
If you know who Tom Spotley is, why don't you tell us? Because we haven't got the time, inclination, or can't be bothered to find out, really. So, cheers.
So following the credits, he takes a call from a man who fears he may be a gay, in Alan's words, a little bit more homophobia creeping in. And then he tries to preserve the man's identity, but obviously names him as Domingo in Little Oakley, which is
the population of Little Oakley is presumably sub 50.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, no Domingos, just the one. Dave Clifton seems really beaten to begin with. He's got no puns, seems prepared to be civil. But then we get into him chatting about the East End gangster biography, Bad Slags.
Which, in typical fashion, Alan pretends he's not interested in, but deep down is absolutely desperate to read.
Yep. Also, Wikipedia tells me Little Oakley has a population of 1,171.
Probably not more than one Domingo.
That's unlikely.
When was it excavated between?
Don't know.
Oh, okay. I think you do.
Bad Slags has its own Facebook page.
Does it?
But it only has 17 likes.
Any detail on the page?
No, nothing.
Okay, fine. Don't check that out.
Not as much as a comment from Stan the Stabber. But actually, Dave he's not prepared to be civil. He's holding back, waiting to slate Alan by confronting him with the pulping of his book. He's so pleased with himself, Dave.
How would Dave know that Alan's book's being pulped?
I don't know.
It's probably a bit like the contract thing in the first series.
We've talked about it off air.
Yeah. Jumping back to Bad Slags quickly, where Alan suggests that they're essentially lending money at very uncompetitive rates of interest. Are Bad Slags effectively the modern day Wonga?
I think Wonga's the modern day Bad Slags. I think the Slags came first.
So are we just saying that Wonga are Slags?
Why have you, Nick Alder, said that?
I've not said that.
Wonga. Brighton.
I've not said it.
I do like the bit in this scene as well when Clifton says quite literally pulped. It's a very smashy and nicey.
He has got a brilliant voice for radio.
Yeah, and he really lands on that last pulped like that. So we're back in the static caravan, and Alan's singing along with Ian Dury and the Blockheads. I thought it was a nice touch that he points to Sonia on the word lunatic.
That's a great spot.
He's also got another new polar neck, I think that's six or seven so far, and describes his ideal date night as Spartacus with corned beef hash, making sweet love to Sonia, and then he'll drive her home.
She will not be staying the night.
That's a bit of a theme of this episode, isn't it? Is Sonia sort of attempts to wheedle her way into the house.
Yeah. It's not wheedling, they're in a relationship. Well, she should be allowed to stay over.
That's entirely true.
It's Alan's rules.
Yeah.
But then Alan's like, actually, no, let's just bring this lovemaking forward. So it must be his way on any sexual whim. Sonia must comply.
Yeah, he seems to be calling the shots on the lovemaking schedule, doesn't he?
And she seems completely... She loves it, and she seems completely happy to wait while he unscrews a jumbo bottle of Listerine.
Generous swig of Listerine, yeah.
She loves him as well, she said. Alan, I love you.
Thanks
she'll do anything for him, including bonk on demand.
Yeah.
Once again, Lynn interrupts them. The third time, I think, this series, perhaps.
What I thought was quite funny about this is... Lynn's arrival, the lovemaking is aborted. He doesn't try and get rid of Lynn. He's not like, actually, Lynn, we were a bit busy. Can you come back in half an hour? It's like, forget about it.
I think that's because Lynn's performing an important task of essentially moving everything into the house.
So all Lynn, the heavy lifting.
Lynn is now a removal man, single-handedly moving things into Alan's house, which, again, she's fine to do.
Absolutely. We discover that Lynn is going to get baptized. She tries to sort of downplay the invite to her baptism a bit. Alan insults her immediately, implying that she needs four men to lift her. And also compares the baptism to a religious wet t-shirt competition, one of several references to wet t-shirt
competitions. Wet t-shirts get a lot of mentions.
Would Meteor commission that, do you think?
Yes.
And I think that's a very unfair comparison, but when she suggests that she needs him to towel her down, she is pointing to her boobs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow.
She also hands over a copy of Bad Slags.
That he's asked for.
Yeah. That he's asked for.
Know Your Enemy. It's mentioned that the only silver lining of his book pulping is that it can end up as a trestle table in a home for battered women.
Yes. And suggests that Bad Slags would put a testy on a gear knob, which I couldn't really see how that would work.
Seems like a lot of effort, doesn't it?
Yeah. So following that, Alan walks into his new house that Lynn has moved everything into single-handedly, and chats to the builders, and instantaneously points out that probably he should have put a skylight in there, which is pretty much, you know, something that the builders wouldn't want to hear when they've been slaving over his new house for presumably weeks.
But also, is that a continuation of the gag that it's making it even more like the static home as well?
Maybe.
It's interesting that the writers weren't sure that joke really comes across, that the layout of the room in the house he's chosen to have as his lounge is exactly like the static caravan.
Okay.
Which I thought that joke was pretty obvious immediately, and I thought it felt like it's a continuation of him being used to living in a hotel to a static caravan choosing the most confined space in the new house.
I've got to say,
well,
I never noticed, but yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
because the way the sofa is laid out, and then you've got all the shelving that makes it tight and everything.
I hadn't spotted it, but yeah.
Oh, so the writers were right to be worried then.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. Concerned for a reason. Also, it kind of implies if he's living in, if regardless if it's a static caravan or the house, he's living in basically the same space. The house is more of a status thing for him, isn't it? It's almost like he's got the house so he can boast about it, not so he can enjoy the space.
And he's not going to.
You've got to remember,
people
forget you can get lost in space.
Yeah. You really can.
Yeah. I love that he presumes that him and the builders are all going to keep in touch. He's got no idea of the social protocol for when the building is
done. Does he actually believe that, though, or is he just being civil? I don't think he actually thinks they're going
to
stay in touch.
I think if John said to him, do you want to go for a pint, he would.
This is a man who tried to go for a pint with the man on the other end of the phone in Curry's in the previous series.
Remember, I don't think Alan has many friends at all.
Yeah. He's got them a present. It's his book, obviously.
Now, I did wonder how many props of the bouncing book they made for the series, because it'd be great if some of those were still in existence.
Well,
I'd love to get hold of one.
In this scene, there are 32 visible copies in the lounge.
You think they're all stockpiled in Coogan's house?
No, they got pulped.
Oh, yeah.
In this documentary that we're... enter Lynn with her wonderful shoe covers
which
she
instantly picks on, which I feel is unfair given that ultimately she's going to make sure that his floor's clean.
Yeah, she's doing the right thing. She's looking after his house. Yeah. Unlike John the Builder, who's sitting there smoking away.
Yeah.
Brand new house, just have a rolly.
And Lynn told Michael off for smoking in the house, but she just lets John get away with it.
Well, I think Alan...
Maybe she has a crush on John.
Well, Alan's too scared to tell John, and I think Lynn's going to go along with whatever Alan wants, but she hates Michael, so it's different.
Fair enough.
The builder's contributions to the conversation get rated and pre-approved, or approved in retrospect, which is weird because before Lynn arrived, they were the only people there to talk to, so...
Yep, true.
Yeah, the fact that it's fine to join in is very strange.
We've just been interrupted live in the studio by producer Jed. He has found that there is some kind of prop version of the Bouncing Bat book available on eBay or an eBay-type website, which is owned by somebody who was working on the sound crew, by the looks of it. So instead of the books genuinely being pulped, it looks like all the cast and crew just took them home.
And it looks like they also sealed the cover over an existing book, obviously.
Yeah, I would assume that's what they would have done, although imagine if they'd have made a real book.
That would have been a commitment to proper method acting, wouldn't it? Coogan writing a book as Partridge, yeah. And then again, and
just
then,
as a prop.
And then putting it out as
well. Although I was always a bit surprised with I, Partridge, that they... Surely it would have been an easy win to just call that Bouncing Back.
It wouldn't work, would it? Because they'd all been pulped. And also, it's an autobiography.
Bouncing Back Part.
About his whole
life.
It
could only have covered up to 2002, yeah. Though, which might have been a bit of a shame. Well, yeah. I'm sure they considered it.
It should be a stickler for accuracy.
Mm. The Builder then takes this opportunity to insult Alan's penis, saying that it's more like an... Yeah, could he hide it with a cup? No, more like an egg cup.
I think, yeah, they see it as an opportunity. The job's finished. This guy's clearly an idiot. Let's insult him a little bit.
And yep. Did you notice he knows Carl the Builder's name in this scene as well?
Just John he struggles with. Yeah. Learned it for the end.
Oh, and Ditch, who I don't think is ever referred to by name.
No. Alan counters by saying that his penis will actually be covered by two egg cups and a kidney dish. Very accurate.
Cut to the BP garage.
Yep, he's turning down a pickled onion because he hates them. Which is weird because in previous scenes at the BP garage, Michael has a very in-depth knowledge of what Alan does and doesn't like. So the pickled onion is a curveball.
I'd have also suspected that Alan would enjoy pickled onions.
Yeah, same.
Like, he's talking about Piccalilli and things like that. I would assume that...
Doesn't he go with Pete for a Ploughman's?
Yeah. So I'm surprised.
Do you think Alan and Michael get on because... Alan literally can't cause offence. There's nothing he could say that Michael would say.
I think
say
that's probably why their relationship works.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think Michael would be offended by anything.
I think that's why there's no tact in sentences like, no, I hate them, when he's offered a pickled onion.
Yeah.
Not a no thanks, but very kind offer.
Alan suggests a barbecue and Michael says, oh no, you're not allowed naked flames on the forecourt.
But he has to kind of draw on that information from the deepest parts of his memory. Like, yeah. It's not just there to recall. It's like,
he's like, I've been told something about this, but I'm trying to remember.
Don't hit the customers. Yeah. No naked flames.
He's recounting it like it's a vocab test or something. Yeah.
And Alan says it's political correctness gone mad.
And they're talking about his book after that. I thought it was interesting that Alan says he's had the last laugh 25 times, but then apparently only 14 of those times are mentioned in the book.
Yeah, it's very modest of him to cut out the 11.
At which point we hear a...
Bing. Yep.
The microwave has cooked up his toad in the hole. Toad in the hole from a BP service station. And this was, again, before the days of the Wild Bean Cafe, when standards were increased dramatically in the area
of
the
Wild Bean
Cafe. Really?
Yeah. If you've taken the time to eat in a Wild Bean Cafe, as I have, you'll know.
Hi, Wild Bean Cafe. Get in touch to sponsor our podcast.
So Michael's made hot floppy bread, hasn't he?
Yeah. That genuinely sounds awful.
Toast in the microwave.
Which is a great precursor to the tale of Michael's full sex with a woman.
Oh, God, this bit.
Where do we start?
Shall I just bullet point the facts we know about the woman?
Yes.
She's 60.
Yep.
They slept together in Cardiff.
Yep.
He describes her as a lady friend. She looks like Bob Dylan.
There's some supplementary description.
She'd had a bit to drink.
Yeah, she's an alcoholic.
Yep. Yep.
He describes her as having a big nose and mad hair.
And she was all over him.
It's the same age difference as Alan and Sonia as well. So Sonia's 33. Can we remember how old Alan's meant to be?
They reference that.
Yeah.
The age difference in the episode. Yeah,
I missed that.
So Alan and Sonia, they're about, 20, about 25 years different?
No, it's less than 14.
14.
Yeah. But Alan says that it's fine to go younger, but it's not fine to go older. Yeah. It's the wrong way, to use his words.
By that rationale, that means you can work out that Michael is 46?
I'm approaching this like a maths problem, basically.
But I think the point is not how old is Michael, it's more the fact that Alan suggests that older women are something to be appalled by.
I'm just going to actually recount how Michael tells Alan they met. So he said they met outside Threshers. She was loading all this booze into her car and she says, "Ooh,
just doing the weekly shop.
Oh, I've had a bit to drink. Would you like to drive us home to Cardiff?"
Where's she been?
Right,
so she's travelled to...
So we're assuming they're in Norwich.
Yep.
Can somebody check what is the driving distance from Norwich to Cardiff? That's a long journey, isn't it?
Right now.
Also, this is a bit of a stretch, but... Did she have to go that far to buy booze because she's banned from all the nearer branches of Threshers?
Keep talking amongst yourselves.
Just wait for you.
Let's start talking about their SAS, that it's like an SAS
your mission.
Gandoon, Cardiff, have full sex with a woman. The distance from Norwich to Cardiff is 273 miles and will take approximately 4 hours and 24 minutes.
And on a National Express coach, you've got to add, at least an hour or two to that.
Adam's our resident coach expert. How long would you give it?
I wouldn't go that far to see Bob Dylan in concert, let alone have full sex with a woman that looks like Bob Dylan.
And there's always a chance that the megabus will catch on fire as well.
Absolutely. True,
yeah, allegedly.
That happened. The megabus will set on fire.
They're then talking about their... it's like an SAS mission, like Bravo 2-0. Randy McNob.
Randy McNob.
Because they change it to Bravo 6-0, but that's not a sexual thing, is it? Are they trying to get towards 6-9?
No, it's 6-0, 16. Again, that's the joke.
Yeah, I missed
so
that
many
one.
Jokes we didn't get.
I missed
knowledge.
That one.
Well, Nick, to be fair, you haven't watched it. So.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And then Michael obviously tops it off with Randy McNob.
Yeah.
So at this point, Michael inquires as to how Alan and Sonia are getting on. Mm. Although I think it's worth obviously not mentioning, but Sonia comes in with a hot dessert. Now, yeah. there's a microwave in the BP garage. Surely,
where's that from?
And surely it'd be cold. And the hassle of driving from wherever Alan lives to a BP garage with whatever his pudding is. It's something with custard, isn't it?
rhubarb crumble and custard.
Like, it's
Alan,
just...
she arrives, Alan says, the dinner lady.
That's ridiculous.
Bizarre. She's been kicked out of her house as well, hasn't she? It's going to be office block.
Yeah. And at this point, you would assume that Alan's going to jump in, save Sonia, give her somewhere to live, which to some degree he does. But this is A, when his hand has been forced, and B, it's not to live with him.
Yeah. And also, it's not his residence that he's offering.
No. It's basically sleeping in the caravan in the garden while I sleep in my brand new house.
No. It's Lynn's mum's bedroom, isn't it?
That's the initial offer, isn't it?
Yeah. Lynn's dad's mum's bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember.
So when he said you can do this.
Yeah.
You can't do this.
So where do we go from?
I think that was fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
You're just making fun of me again.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. Always the same.
Yeah, it's fine.
Sonia, perhaps understandably, doesn't want to sleep in Lynn's dead mum's bed.
Sleep in Lynn's dead mum's bed?
Well, are they implying, did Lynn's mother die in her bed? Is that why she doesn't
sing
it?
No, I think that's inferred.
I think the purpose of that line is so they can then follow it up with, Michael did something very similar last night, yeah. And he's very happy about it.
So what you're saying is it's good writing.
It's basically to get that gag in, yeah. I think we're over at Prayer Wave now on Talk Cambridge 106.2 FM.
Oh, yeah.
Cameo packed.
With Tessa McPherson, who is, of course, Rebecca Front, one of my favourite comedy actresses, and basically
she's
a watchword for whether something's going to be good or not.
Yep. Correct.
Mm. She's in it, it's good. End of.
Just for those that don't know, you're looking at the Amanda Iannucci, Chris Morris kind of school of comedies here. So you've got things like Day to Day, then also going into Coogan's Run, Know Me, Knowing You, Big Train, which is a personal favourite. She's also does have a part in Nighty Night, and she was in Humans as well.
Yes, she was.
Yes, she was great in all of those.
Yep. Especially, she's brilliant.
Oh, and obviously The Thick of It too.
Yep. Yep. Speaking of Nighty Night, Julia Davis plays Kate Fitzgerald, her radio guest, another titan of comedy.
And again, she's done all the kind of Brass Eye Jam things, Big Train as well, and The Parole Officer, Steve Coogan film.
And Felicity Montague rejoined her in 99. She had a role in that, as well as Rebecca Front.
But what I did note down here, Julia Davis had a role in Steve Coogan, The Inside Story. Has anybody seen that?
No.
So it was a spoof documentary on BBC Two back in, I think, December 2009. I vaguely remember watching it. I have no idea if it's any good, but Reeves and Mortimer featured in it.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. It was very funny.
So there is a trailer to it on YouTube that maybe will pop up on the socials just to see if anybody else remembers it.
In some ways, it's perhaps kind of a loose relation of The Trip, an early relation of The Trip, in that it's, you know, kind of it's caricaturing people's perceptions of Steve Coogan.
But I think it's a lot more spoofed than that. Just rewatching the trailer, the Reeves and Mortimer bits are ridiculous.
It's a loose relation.
Yeah, very loose.
So, yes, Kate Fitzgerald, played by Julia Davis, is on to talk about the book Someone Else that she wrote. There is a book that exists called Someone Else, but it's by Tonino Besacchista and is currently ranked in books on Amazon 1,242,311.
So quite high then.
Yes. Yeah. It's her tale of a childhood. This is the fake book, not the real book. Childhood to prostitution to drug addiction to recovery.
Sounds like the same book.
Pretty much.
Needles to say it was quite good.
And Alan's on there talking about bouncing back to prove that he is and are bouncing back.
I like the way she introduces him. Alan, for a while, had a TV chat show and was quite a big name up there, and then it all went very wrong. Yeah. Not a bit wrong, very wrong.
And he pulls a face at that as well. Yeah. He's like, nope, don't think so. I think Tessa McPherson is looking for conflict a little bit, though. She's a Kirsty Walk on Desert Island Discs in this exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
But Alan soon starts presenting until he realises it's not his show.
I think part of the, or one of the reasons that this kind of thing falls down quite quickly is because you've got two people talking about books that are ultimately kind of fighting for attention to talk about their own respective books. Mm. I'm not sure the dynamics work.
Yeah. And one is a clear winner because her book has some real gravity.
It's almost like they're trying to out-grief each other or something.
It's quite similar in tone to the Chris Morris scene from Series 1 in the radio studio with Peter Baxendale Thomas. Two clashes, or two people coming together and clashing, quite obviously very opposite ends of the scale in terms of...
It's the same, but... the fact that Alan is once again completely outwitted by the other person.
I think at some points he's quite witty in this.
Well, he does call her Tara Peter Frampton double barrel shotgun Kensington on the horse.
I was going to say, well, yeah, but she's able to outwit him in an intellectual way. He's able to insult her.
Of course.
And eventually she does come down to his level and beats him, I think, when he's saying, you put drugs up your bum, why use your bum? You have a perfectly good mouth. And she said, yeah, some people can confuse the two. It's easy to walk out of your ass.
But she is the one who... says forget it and storms out. So ultimately, does Alan win?
So Alan wins.
I think so. Peter Baxendale Thomas storms out.
Yeah. So Alan wins that one as well.
That's not a victory.
You notice the presenter, she didn't really seem that bothered that one of her guests has got up and stormed out either. They just continue the show and she carries on talking to Alan.
Yeah, and at the end she's just like, oh, a bit more exciting than normal.
I like when she's talking about the various drugs she'd done, she starts talking about ketamine and he just goes, shit. And then later asks her if she's ever shaved a crackling, which is particularly...
Also, given this is Christian radio, I don't think they'd be tackling these kind of subjects.
No?
Why not? There's stories of redemption or something, aren't they?
I think perhaps
not shoving crack up your bum
and bouncing back.
Perhaps if
but Alan's made them go into that detail. Yeah, I don't think that's where the radio.
Maybe if both books were about being saved by the Lord, that would make a little bit more sense.
And Jesus bounced back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so there you go.
In every sense.
But remember, according to Lynn, Jesus wasn't brown.
Let's not open that can of worms. So he details his breakdown a little bit more here, doesn't he? He talks about driving to Dundee in his bare feet, about all of the Toblerone, treating his Toblerone addiction as seriously as Kate treats heroin.
Alan's not happy that chocolate addiction isn't given the same level of gravitas as drug addiction. Right or wrong, I'm not sure, but Alan is not happy.
In iPartridge, Alan actually goes into detail about his the length and depth of his Toblerone addiction. He ends up spending £54,000 on Toblerone.
That's a lot of chocolate.
Yeah, I'm going to work it out based on about, let's say, an average of £3 for a large Toblerone. I think that's a fair price. So that's let's do it on a calculator.
54, 1, 2, 3 divided by, what did we say?
Three. So he bought approximately 18,000 Toblerones.
That is a lot.
That's a lot. No wonder he packed on the pounds.
You can get giant Toblerone bars, which are 4.5 kilograms in weight, and they retail for £75.
But bear in mind, at some point, he says, in this actual scene, he says he doesn't eat a small one. I mean a medium-sized one.
Yeah.
And also, at his absolute peak of his chubness, Alan balloons to 16.5 stone.
Also, Toblerone, that's just... chocolate that you used to get on ferries. No, when else would you buy Toblerone?
Would you like some Toblerone facts at this point?
Go on. I'd bloody love some.
So, well, I think we're continuing Nick's discussion about where would you buy it from. 25% of all Toblerone bars are sold in duty-free shops.
I'm not surprised.
A surprise at all. Toblerone is a mix of almonds, nougat, honey and chocolate, and it's invented by a man called Theodore Tobler in 1908. It's the last chocolate bar still produced in Switzerland. All other Swiss chocolate is made in developing countries.
What? But still called Swiss chocolate.
Yeah. Also, my favourite thing about this, and I don't know if anyone else is aware of this, has anyone else ever been told about the fact there is a bear visible in the mountain logo of Toblerone?
Yes, that rings a bell.
Yes, so if you have a look, you can see there is like the silhouette of a bear on one half of the mountain, which is inspired by the Matterhorn, which is also inspired why the bar is triangular in shape.
There you go. Toblerone facts, pal.
I'm not sure it's in the episode, but there's a point at in some Alan text that I've read that at the height of his addiction, he actually put a regular-sized Toblerone sideways in his mouth.
Is that not mentioned in the book or anything? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I can't... No, Don't think so.
If we get a chance, we will attempt to do that and put some pictures on the socials. Let's see how we get on.
So messy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Adam, you can go first on that one.
Okay. I didn't have to eat any mustard, so it's only fair.
Yeah, that's still repeating on me weeks after.
Oh, lovely. So there's a flashback of his Toblerone binge as well, isn't there?
What isn't mentioned in the TV series, but is referred to in the book, is that on the way back, when he drives back down to Norwich, he mentions that there's a plastic hose in the exhaust pipe, which was for a suicide bid. He doesn't actually mention that in the TV series, but he was planning to kill himself.
Bit too dark for the TV series?
Maybe. But absolutely fine for the book.
That's more than clinically fed up, isn't it?
It is.
Boo-hoo.
But yeah, there are two flashbacks to the Toblerone / Dundee breakdown in this.
Why do his shoes come off?
Well, they didn't come off.
They didn't come off.
He drove there barefoot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got a fun question.
Can I repeat that question? Why did he drive in his bare feet?
He's just
having a breakdown.
Having a breakdown.
He had Toblerones in the footwell and everything.
He was briefly mindless.
Yeah, he was. Quick question for everybody. Driving while barefoot, legal or illegal? What do you think?
Ooh, good question.
I think it's legal.
Illegal.
Do we know?
I can't see why it would be illegal.
I don't think that you could... Producer Jed, legal or illegal? He thinks it's legal. You're correct, it is legal. Technically, basically, as long as you are responsible and you have control of the vehicle you're in, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. Also, I don't think Alan would break the law, even in the grips of a breakdown.
I wonder how you define that. So could you drive in flip-flops?
Yeah, flip-flop, any footwear, barefoot, it's all fine, as long as you're...
Flip-flops. If anyone's driven in flip-flops, it's
I'd like to think it's illegal to walk on your tightrope Christmas card list. I'd like to think it is illegal to wear Crocs whilst driving, or just to wear Crocs full stop.
In general. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Ban them.
So there's a few descriptions of the way that his book is going to be destroyed. People keep getting it wrong. Sonia says destroyed. Lynn says incinerated. Alan corrected. No, pulped. As if pulped is a more sort of humane, friendly. Did anyone catch how many copies of the book are being pulped?
Yes.
How many?
14,000.
So is that the minimum print run, do we think?
Well, we have established he's probably sold about 9 copies, didn't we?
Yeah.
So probably.
I would imagine he had 15,000 made. He sold about 20, and the rest are in his house / garage.
Yeah.
And remember, we figured out that he's possibly only sold 6 copies.
Was it 6?
At least at the point of the first episode of this series. Mm-hmm. Just to go back a little bit, I think we missed something which is worth a bit of discussion. When Alan is discussing with the host of Prayer Wave the sort of things he discusses on his show, one of the things he lists, we discuss issues, Europe, conspiracy theories, what happens if you just eat crisps? Would anybody like to know what happens if you just eat crisps?
Is the answer type 2 diabetes?
I think that might be one of the results.
Okay. I've done some research on this as well. Are you going to refer to the same Guardian article?
I found 2 articles based around just eating crisps. So it's a bit of a mixed bag of results. No pun intended.
Assorted pack.
So I found an article on The Guardian and one on The Telegraph. Now, the woman in The Guardian... her story is, I have a cup of tea for breakfast, skip lunch, ready for my first large bag of crisps at around 4 p.m, second bag at 8 p.m. During the day, I'll have a few cups of tea and sometimes a cola. I don't get ravenous because my body is used to it after all these years. The only time I'll eat anything else is a family meal at a restaurant, then I'll pick up a piece of dry chicken and a morsel of bread just to stop people nagging at me.
Who is this lunatic?
I haven't written down her name. And when her son was 5... Right, so her story about how this happened. When her son was 5, she brought a packet of barbecue-flavoured crisps, and that was it. I was in love. I didn't eat anything else for the next 8 years until the day I decided to go wild and try a Monster Munch.
Once you pop.
They had been a childhood treat, and they became my crisp of choice. I mean, I can approve that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she continues, I don't get ill more often than anyone else, although my nails are weak and my gums bleed when I brush my teeth.
Wow.
So those are some results.
To be fair, she is brushing them with Frazzles.
So. Yeah. And on a slightly less fun results from The Telegraph.
Because that was the fun-filled one.
Because bleeding gums are laugh a minute.
Well, this gets worse. The Telegraph article that refers to this. A 22-year-old spent 3 years eating only crisps. She was eating up to 15 bags a day and ended up in hospital at 14 stone with severe abdominal pains and jaundice. She developed gallstones up to 1.5 inches in diameter, which formed from the excessive amounts of cholesterol in her body. So she's on 15 bags a day. The other woman from The Guardian was only on 2 a day. So if you are going to only eat crisps, I would say reduce the amount of bags per day.
And we'll just say shout out to Krull1981 on Twitter, who came in and asked us, what happens if you just eat crisps? And there's your answer.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Step away from the bag.
I would say don't do it.
We find out shortly after this that there's some good news for Sonia. She's getting the static home, but she's not to come to the house uninvited, and she is expected to pay rent.
Yeah. Well, I thought when Alan says we can come to some sort of arrangement, he means a sex-based arrangement, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, I thought so, but then she says, oh, so I don't have to pay rent. And he's like, no, we can come to some sort of arrangement. So he's also expecting money, I think.
The arrangement is you pay me rent and sex on demand. And you need to understand his complicated code system, which uses various condiments from the kitchen.
Or put a naan bread in the window.
Ketchup.
Ketchup.
No, there's also naan bread.
We're at Lynn's baptism. There are 25 to 30 people there, I counted.
I'd say a pretty good turnout, to be fair.
Well, it's more people than turned up to an evening with an afternoon at a Partridge. Yeah. The travel time. he opens his speech by saying, you probably don't know me, which I thought was funny. So he's never met any of Lynn's friends or family. Peggy Benfield is Lynn's mum.
Also, why is Michael there? And he's quite dressed up.
He's filming.
He's got a snazzy bow tie.
I know he's filming, but why is he there?
The videographer.
But Lynn hates him.
He's the videographer.
But Lynn hates him.
Go on, Lynn, lass. That's what he shouts.
Getting that pool. Alan's speech unravels about 2 minutes in. It's awful.
It's terrible.
I thought this would be the sort of thing he could handle.
And he kind of turns it around to be about him.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with Lynn. It's just about him.
I think it's a good bit of writing because it's very subtly unravels. Yeah. It doesn't just like all of a sudden unravel. Yeah. It's very subtle and brilliant.
Through is, was, tis, was, miming suicide, shit chatting, etc.
He's back in his snakes and ladders tie in this
ooh,
section
good spot.
Cameo wise, Rob Brydon's coming in now as a genuine fan, perhaps not of the Jed Maxwell level of insane.
No, a bit milder.
I was just going to say, Rob Brydon obviously has gone into some pretty huge things. Cameo wise, who do you think across the two series of I, Man and Partridge is the biggest deal? I guess Simon Pegg, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely Pegg.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Although it's taken a long time for Peg to get to that point. I think, you know, you would have had a good few years after this series where he still wasn't like a massive Hollywood name or anything.
Yeah, true.
I guess it was kind of Hot Fuzz, wasn't it? And Shaun of the Dead that crossed him over. And that was like 2004. So
I'm not convinced that Rob Brydon does a great job in this role. It's a bit, he's very exaggerated, more so than Sonia or Pete or any of those people. I think his get up is quite ridiculous.
Yeah, for such a small character with very little detail about kind of who he is, why he's there, or why he's dressed like that, it's quite an extreme kind of character to throw in.
Yeah,
is he fully mulleted as well?
Definitely.
So yeah, he seems a bit sort of a bit larger than life, and in a caricatured way. I'm not totally sold.
That could have been a fairly functional character that gives Alan the reason to obviously react in the way that he does, but you don't need the Rob Brydon character to be so extreme and over the top.
But as we've spoken, there are quite a lot of that. That's kind of a running theme throughout this series.
True.
Yeah. Sonia's a let loose at this point, and Alan's very concerned about that, but at least she admits that he's well hung.
Which he reacts, he's like, ooh.
Yeah, he's really he's kind of annoyed by that.
Michael's lady, Neris, calls Alan's phone.
he knows her name now.
Yeah. His number out. I presume that means Michael has no phone.
That sounds plausible, to be fair. Yeah.
And all his friends.
Well,
does
Michael know her name? Because he says, oh, hiya. Oh, Neris, I. So is it actually, oh, it's me, my name's Neris? I don't know. Like, maybe he doesn't know.
I think he probably just forgot. And then when she says that, he's like, that's it. It's Neris.
No, but he says, I know your name now.
What? So she says, it's Neris. Remember, we slept together the other night when I was boozed. Yeah, you drove me to Cardiff.
I know your name now. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. We cleared that up.
Yeah.
And the writers did choose Neris, so it's obviously a Welsh name as well, so it ties into that, just in case people don't get it.
There you go. I've just remembered where that sideways Toblerone in Alan's mouth tidbit came from. It's on Anglian Lives. He admits that he got one stuck sideways and that someone had to come and break its back with a toothbrush.
Lovely detail.
Yeah, that coincides obviously with him having flashbacks again. I think he has 6 Toblerones in the car, I counted.
Well, I have a question about this flashback. If you go and watch it again, he's sat in the back seat of the car.
Is he?
He's not in the front seat. He's in the back seat.
So obviously he's parked up, hasn't he? So maybe he's just moved into the back
for more room. More chocolate eating room.
More chocolate indulgence.
But I haven't gone back and checked the other flashback scenes if they're all in the back seat or whether he moves from the back to the front.
I think he moves from the front to the back.
Yeah, because there's a shot where it goes down and it shows that he's in bare feet and his feet are clearly accelerator.
Also, I have a note here that his fat face makeup is a bit rubbish.
Mm. I don't think it's too bad.
Is it 16 and a half stone worth? We'll never know.
Yeah. Around this point, I think Rob Brydon starts getting in a couple of, you know, not digs exactly, but constructive criticism about Alan's book and Alan.
It doesn't go down well, though, does it?
He's at a low, well, isn't he, Alan, here?
Yeah, he's struggling. Three fuck-offs from Alan.
It's quite rare that Partridge or the writing results to a swear word for a cheap laugh, but in this case, it really does work.
Yeah. Three times.
Three times, and they're all funny.
I've also got a note that Rob Brydon is not a convincing scared man. His scared face is just, I don't believe it. Not for a second.
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to the point that I think that character is unnecessarily exaggerated. And I like Rob Brydon, but I'm not sure this is his best work.
And then I think we have the one time in this series, or certainly in this episode, where Alan gets a big win with his Blue Peter anecdote.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see Alan getting a little win before his book gets popped.
Yes, before he's brought back down again.
Don't you think, though, that the aggressive way he tells the anecdote actually sucks all the fun out of it?
No, so, I like it.
Well, the writers feel that it was actually a bit too aggressive, and they feel like it makes Alan a bit too nasty, the way that they actually performed that scene in the end.
Mm.
But I think it works because he's just...
He's snapped, isn't he?
He's at his wit's end, and he's lost it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is quite funny.
And I don't get why he just goes, buckaroo! Is that just another one of those throwaway...
those throwaway Jack and Akinori type things.
Well, actually, I've had another communique from friend of the show, Lee Debbidge, overnight.
Lee Cabbage?
Every bloody week Lee Cabbage gets a mention.
Just because you were talking in a previous episode about things like Jack and Akinori and Spice World and how they seem a bit arbitrary, every take that Coogan did when we watched this filmed, those exclamations were different each time. So the ones that made it into the series just happened to be the takes that they used, but there were all kinds of other...
So I don't suppose you or Lee could remember what some of the other takes were?
Afraid not. It was about 14 years
ago. I wonder maybe with the other ones that got used, it was just they had that rotating list of kind of maybe 10 or 12 references, and it's just whatever made the cut.
Yeah, quite possibly. Although I imagine he probably had to do a different one each time because you wouldn't have known cut was going to be used. So it's quite interesting. Anything more on the baptism scene?
I think that pretty much draws it to a close.
Just one small observation. There is a visible space hopper in this scene, and he references a space hopper and when he's talking about the 70s in his speech as well.
Oh, yeah. We're then on to, I think, the final scene of the series. Very poignant moment.
Very moving.
Although I would say also, given how strong parts of this series are, a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It's a bit of a weird way to end the entire series.
Yeah, you'd think maybe they would end it on the Alan coming out on top in the... arguably coming out on top with his Blue Peter story.
Yeah, so obviously everybody knows the scene already, but Alan is down at the pulping plant watching his book get pulped. Tony the pulper, who accompanies him, is a real pulper who plays himself.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well done, Tony.
My question to the group, would you go to the pulping of your own book?
Is it closure for him? Does he feel like he needs to be there?
I mean, that's the only reason you go, surely. Just to sort of draw a definitive line under your
sadness. He's quite proud as well, isn't he? There's my book, look!
Yeah. Getting pulped.
Also for Alan, he probably doesn't have anything better to do with his time either. Yeah,
true.
Why not?
And it is a bit of a through line through all of the Alan Partridge output, really, is that he is to some extent immune to his own failures, isn't he? You know, like, things like this happen to him all the time, but he's quite neutral about it.
Do you think he asked Tony for a pint afterwards?
Oh, definitely.
I think Tony probably went.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, anyone else would feel far too embarrassed to go to the pulping of their own book, whereas for Alan, it's a great day out.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end of this episode and the end of the current series. I'm going to pass over to my esteemed colleague Tom Stab for a little bit of IMDb information.
Hello. So this episode gets an 8.6 out of 10 rating on IMDb. So overall, the average rating of this series is 8.58 on IMDb. That's compared to Series 1, which is 8.65. So Series 1 rated slightly higher in terms of IMDb ratings. The highest rated episode in this series was a 9 out of 10, and that was the Tex episode, so
Never Say Alan Again.
The highest in Series 1 was also a 9, and that's To Kill a Mockingjay, the Jed Maxwell episode. So those are considered the two best across the two series. So I guess my question to everyone is, you know, how does that rating compare with how you think about the two series together? Which one's better? Do you think that's a fair summation of the series in terms of ratings?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. It's quite tough to decide what's better, Series 1 or Series 2. I think Series 1 feels a bit more classic because there are just a few points kind of jump the shark sort of points in series two, where it's a bit too slapstick for my liking.
From my point of view, I think I was looking for, in preparation for doing this podcast as a whole, going back and watching episode two, I was thinking I was going to enjoy that more, but actually I think I ended up enjoying series one a bit more. I just think it was actually generally just a little bit better. I think those ratings are pretty accurate, to be honest.
I think that's fair. Yeah, in that they're both very good, but one slightly edges it over the other. I think series one is a near perfect sitcom. I think series two falls down in some areas, but it's because they're trying to do something more. I think it's beyond, like, you know, your sort of traditional.
Yeah, which I think Armando and Peter Bainham and the team, I think they acknowledge that they were trying to make it a little bit different in the feel to series one.
I've got a few quotes from Armando Iannucci because he once described the second series as terrible.
really?
Yeah, but when challenged on a few years afterwards, he said, calling it terrible may have been an overreaction, but it's just that we felt we got the first series so right, there was a lot of expectation for the second. The process of making it was much tougher. In retrospect, maybe we thought about it a little too hard.
And it's that difficult second album, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's kind of telling as well, the fact there is so much around them writing scenes right up to the last minute of filming, so that just tells you enough that they weren't really quite ready for it when they had to go and make it.
I remember hearing them say that they really agonized over every word as well. There's little things like Alan prefers the word giant to the word big, and little, you know, details like that are evident throughout.
Nick, if putting you on the spot, what would you prefer out of series one or series two?
I think I'd agree with everything that you've said so far. I think series one edges it just. And I think it's just that thing of series two trying to go a little bit further, a little bit bigger and better, and falls down in a couple of areas. But let's face it, as a kind of a two series side by side, they're both really good.
Pretty flawless. Would you have liked to have seen more characters from series one come back for series two?
No, I think Michael is the right character to take from series one to series two. I think it
got Michael and Lynn are the consistencies.
Yeah. But, I think they got that just right.
I think it would have felt very contrived if there was a way to kind of get the hotel staff in there or something. That would have felt quite cheesy. Yeah. The sort of thing they do on Friends or something like that, you know, like, the whole gang's back together.
And I guess they've had to use a device to get Michael back, that he's got an equivalent job where Alan goes. If you did that, if you did that for a second hotel staff, it wouldn't feel realistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the big question is, what does everybody think is probably their favourite episode of this series? And I'm not sure, did we do this on series one? What was everybody's favourite episode of series one?
Oh, we did. I think I planted my flag in the ground for
Jill, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
Jill
the
episode.
Valentine's Day episode. Yeah, I think that was the best one. Yeah. I think that's probably the best episode.
Is that
episode
across the board series one Valentine's Day episode?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, series two.
I think there's going to be some disagreements here.
I think it's tough because I think there are a lot of episodes that have a scene I'm not so keen on and a scene that I think is absolutely standout.
I think that is my issue with this series. There's always one moment in nearly every episode where I'm a bit like, not so keen on that.
I'd go episode one in this series. I think that's, for me, comfortably the best. And I don't think it's got many...
The talented Mr. Allen.
Mm. Yeah. The chalk penis. Going back to the old school. Alan looking fat in the video. Meteor videos.
It's very self-contained, isn't it? I think I would go for that, or possibly I Know What Alan Did Last Summer, the Inland Revenue Bono's House episode. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
Stab?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Never Say Alan again. I'm going with IMDb on this one. The fact that The Spy Who Loved Me, the Bond walkthrough, the whole episode is just brilliant. £9,500. I love you, in a way. It's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, for me, some great moments, but also some moments that I really don't like in that episode. I think my favourite one is probably episode two, The Colour of Alan. I think the Dante's Fire bit, the foot on the spike. I do think his whole speech at the award ceremony is one of my favourite Partridge bits of scripts of all time. So that's enough to edge it for me. Yeah. So interestingly, have we all gone for a different episode?
We have.
Well, I think that tells you what you need to know.
For different needs. Surprise! This week we have a special guest in the form of the creator of Love in the Key of Partridge, a Tumblr chronicling one lady's adventures on Tinder, where she only communicates with people in Alan Partridge quotes. We're going to cut over to Tom Dark now, who is speaking to the lady herself.
Alan's Love Asylum.
Thank you, Adam. So, yes, Tom Dark, not Stab, from Monkey Tennis here, and I am joined by our first ever live studio guest by the name of Hannah. Now, those of you that may be aware, there are quite a few Partridge-based social media accounts and blogs around the world of Partridge, things such as Accidental Partridge, Political Partridge, and also a very hilarious blog called Love in the Key of Partridge, which has been running for, I believe, a couple of years now. And Hannah, who joins us here,
is the curator of said blog. So, Hannah, for those people that don't know what Love and the Gear Partridge is, can you give us a bit of an explanation?
Yeah, so it's basically a website or blog, even, where I just respond to people or send messages using Alan Partridge quotes. So just basically troll all the men of Tinder and OkCupid.
Other dating websites are available.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so basically dating app chat, which is everything you write is quotes from our beloved Alan.
Yeah, everything I get from the watching it, my terribly made notes, and the internet scripts, which are a vital source. It needs to be perfect.
Of course, word for word. And just to, and what is the blog address for those listening?
It's loveandthekeyofpartridge.tumblr.com.
Cool. And I urge you all to check it out. It is bloody hilarious. So, Hannah, my first question is really, where did this idea come from? Who had this idea? Was it your idea?
It was my idea. There are imitators, but they stole it from me, just putting it out there. And I think I was just sat on the sofa one night and just perusing the online dating world, thinking it was all very depressing. But that if someone had sent me a message using an Alan Partridge quote, I would probably want to marry them immediately. And so I thought, maybe if I flipped it as a girl doing it, what kind of response would I get? And kind of asked a few friends what they thought, and they were like, yes, must do this. So started sending some messages and started getting some ridiculous responses back. So the blog was born. And then, yeah.
Okay. So, and you do this all under your real profile.
Yeah, it's not.
You don't have a picture of Alan or anything like that on it.
No.
Because that would lead to interesting chat, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it's definitely me. It's 100% me. You know, it's my genuine profile. It's kind of one that I don't use so much to actually meet people anymore because certain websites are just horrendous. So,
right.
Just, you know.
So, how successful have you found it's been in terms of actually just getting chat response, first of all? Like, do most people reply when you're talking to them in Alan's words?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
It's quite hard not to get a response from men on online dating websites, to be honest. And it kind of varies. Like, if I open the chat myself, I usually get a response. But if they're sending me the message first, I kind of prefer those ones.
Do they give you something to work with? Do you then go and find an appropriate quote to come back
exactly.
with?
Exactly. There are some times when they say something, I'm like, right, well, there's something right there to go with. So I think I just got one, actually.
Oh, live and direct, live, happening now.
Live Tindering, where someone actually asked me about whether girls feel pressure to be perfectly hairless all the time. Which obviously...
There's an obvious quote coming up here.
There's an obvious. Yeah. I have gone with, I don't think we'll have hair. You see, I think we'll be completely hairless. And I think at the end of the day, what will happen is we'll be more or less the same, but with bigger hands and eyes and sex organs. I'm hoping he comes back something else so I can say, are you hairy Mary as well, obviously. So...
Yeah, so some of the chats just write themselves, basically.
They really do.
Obviously, the best way to experience a blog is by logging on and having a look because it's basically full of screen grabs of the conversations.
Yeah.
But have you got any kind of favourite conversational examples that you could give us?
I think some of my favourite ones just were from the beginning because I wasn't expecting it to do very well at all. And then it kind of just took off completely. Mm-hmm. But again, like, my favourite ones are definitely the ones where they start the conversation. So at the beginning, I kind of tried to take it down a more sexual route straight away just to get ridiculous answers from them. And I'd start with, like, let's take our tops off and have a cuddle. You know, very kind of ones that you expect to get. And they come out with, I'm all for exchanging body heat, Hannah. And then we're just down to the final lather. Just relax. There's a foamy bit on your shoulder. Let's make it even more frothy with a squirt of light lemon liquid. Don't you feel good? And the response I'm relaxed, eyes shut, and in your hands. So yeah, I feel good. Froth it up, and let's turn up the heat slowly in this bath, Missy.
So what we're learning here really is that men are basically idiots and will respond to anything. Did you get bored of kind of trying to use the same quotes all the time? Have you found you've had to really extend your quotations into quite lesser known bits of Partridge?
Yeah, I did. Has anybody who has kind of read it from the beginning probably knows that I take regular long breaks from doing it, because
I can imagine it's a bit, yeah.
It's just horrendous after a while, especially when you're using quotes about Kit Kats and sticking two fingers up and using four fingers. It just gets really, really, really gross very quickly. So I have to.
There's not much coming back from that, is there?
No, it's really not. So I do take a break, and I have expanded out into Mid-Morning Matters, which okay. I find is really great. It's just so conversational, and like all of it is. And there's just the opening questions that he does in the studio are great openers for online dating as well.
Do you often use some of his phone-in? Some of his phone-in subjects as conversation openers.
So I've been trying.
Who's the best lord?
Yes, I have done that one. And I can't. I think I wrote that one down. I'll have a look. I'll see if I can find that one. I've trying to be using the fact of the day. So I was trying to go out with crab sticks earlier. and I have also used that there are no Dutch elms left in Britain.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. Yeah. One of the ones here is, somebody had just opened with, what's your idea of a great night out? And I responded, I'd like to go around Legoland with Sean Connery. And then afterwards, we'll go for a lovely lamb lunch in the centre of Windsor. He said, oh, who wouldn't? That's one sexy dude. You sure he'd be into Legoland, though? And I said, I don't agree. He'd go to Legoland. Bye.
Has anybody ever kind of figured it out and kind of gone, I know what you're doing? Like, I know what you're quoting?
No. Well, actually, no. One guy did, and I went out for a drink with him.
Fair enough. So, that was the point of the whole exercise, right?
It wasn't really, but it did take him quite a long time, and it got until, because he was called, oh gosh, not Michael. What's the name?
We can call him Michael for the sake of.
No, you know the guy, the guy who works in the Linton Travel Tavern, who.
Ben.
Ben. So yes, Ben. If he's listening, had a great drink. but I was looking for someone called Ben so that I could say Ben.
very specific dating searches on name alone.
I'm also trying to find a Michael so that I can do a few Michael quotes with
So Ben. It's only Alan quotes. You're not quoting other characters from.
No, I quote other characters as well.
Oh, okay.
I think it just adds to the variety. So it's not just Alan, I guess, technically. It's just quotes from Alan Partridge.
So do you have a standout moment? Like, if people were to go onto the blog and if there was one to look at in particular, is there a particular screen grab of a conversation you'd say people should start with?
Oh, well, obviously I love the Dan one, where I just said Dan, about 15, 16 times. And he just was like, Hannah? Hannah? What the hell's going on? And then I just left it like that.
Yeah, which I think is fair enough.
And also, I quite enjoy the one where I branched out into some quotes from a Guardian kind of interview that Partridge did.
Oh, he did in character. Yeah.
In character, where he was talking about Bryan Adams. And someone actually invited me to a Bryan Adams gig at the O2.
Result.
So
would go, would attend.
I just used all the quotes from that, talking about how Bryan Adams... gravelly voice had I had been trying to replicate it at some karaoke, and I'd been repeatedly sick, and he gave me his number, and he was trying to get me to go out with him, told me I had nothing interesting to do that evening and I should go meet him at the O2, and I ended with meet me in the car park in half an hour. At that point he gave me his number, so
there you go. That's what you need to do, ladies. Just tell a guy you've been sick trying to impersonate Bryan Adams and you'll get a guy's number. Which says more about males, doesn't it? So yeah, I really would urge everyone listening to go and check out the blog, because it is brilliant. And it's also actually quite unbelievable when you read these things and think these are genuine conversations. Everybody there is taking it at face value. It which means there just aren't enough Partridge fans on Tinder. That also tells you.
Yeah, and that's quite depressing as well, because
it is.
You know, Partridge fans are the best people.
Bleak times for Partridge fans. Okay, so Hannah, if people want to keep up to date with how your Partridge Tindering is going, where will they find you? Just as a bit of a reminder before we wrap up.
So there's obviously the blog, so loveinthekeyofpartridge.tumblr.com, and there's also a Twitter account, which is in the key of Partridge, and the kind of Twitter handle is at LITKO Partridge.
LITKO Partridge.
A bit of a mouthful.
There we go. Well, what we'll do, we will post up on the Monkey Tennis accounts. We'll post up to your accounts and the blog address up there as well. So again, to find Monkey Tennis on Twitter, we are at The Partridge Pod, and Monkey Tennis on Facebook is facebook.com/The Partridge Pod. Hannah, we'll let you get back to your Tindering. Other dating apps are available. And I'll hand back over to Adam in the studio. Thanks, Adam. Take it away.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi.
Okay, it's time for the last game of Cards Against Alanity. Tom Dark has won the series, so Jeopardy is at a low.
But we're playing for pride here,
we're
people.
Playing for pride. So,
also, we have no choices, yeah. So it doesn't actually matter.
everybody has one card remaining to hand in to Jed.
In they go.
It completes this sentence. You take the lid off the gear knob and find a blank. So he's just sifting through those.
No, mine works. It's not funny,
he'll
but it works.
Bell, yeah, for the one he works best.
I just handed mine over. I didn't even look. It doesn't matter.
I guess the jeopardy here is it's Tom Stab's last chance to get on this.
Come on!
That is the jeopardy.
Yep. Okay. So, you take the lid off the gear knob and find a human JCB. You take the lid off the gear knob to find $8,000 a year. You take a lid off the gear knob and find a mug with my face on one side and a cat on the other. I knew
yes!
you'd go for that. It's Tom Dark again.
In your face, Stab.
And finally, you take the lid off the gear knob to find a wet Christmas. So,
that was my one.
The final scores for this series of Cards Against Alanity: Tom Dark has 4, Tom Stab has none, Nick and myself have 1. So Tom Dark is this series' winner.
Sorry, what did Stab have again?
0.
Okay, cool.
Shall I eat a tablespoon of mustard?
So Nick won series 1.
Would you like to eat a tablespoon of mustard?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Well, that's it for Cards Against Alanity and for this series of Monkey Tennis. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing. Obviously, it's the end of I'm Alan Partridge, but there's so much more in the Partridge canon. I Partridge, Alpha Papa, Knowing Me, Knowing You, and all of that. So we will be back before too long. You can catch up with us on Twitter at The Partridge Pod, facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, and ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. If you want to catch any of us individually, I don't know why you would, it's at Adam Nonfiction, at Nick Alder, ALDER, at Tom Stab, with Stab with 2 B's, and at at Tom Dark, or our producer is at Jed Shepherd. From all of us, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with you soon. Have a great life. Bye.
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 See you in Strat.
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey Tennis.
Damn!
Monkey Tennis.
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
Monkey Tennis.
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey Tennis?
Damn!
Monkey Tennis? On the whole, a very good effort, 7/10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net. Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
Golly! So that's the end of Series 2 of Monkey Tennis. We just want to say one final thank you to everyone that subscribed, listened, rated, reviewed the podcast. We really appreciate it. We also want to say thank you to everyone that sent in messages through social media. They've been, broadly speaking, good. So please do keep them coming. We love hearing your thoughts on the show, on Alan, and on the other characters. So just time to say that we will be back with our Alpha Papa special. Part one will go out on Christmas Day, and part two goes out on Boxing Day. So that's it. Thank you, staff, and goodbye. I'll leave you with a final aha. No, I'm joking. I won't do that. Okay, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.